Welcome back to The Glam Chemist. I'm your host, Genesis Velasquez. Today's guest is Asia Fee of Alchemist Asia. She shares with us how she's managed to keep a successful career as a chemist while working remote, living in Alaska. She's been able to build a community of folks using her social media platform, establish job opportunities while networking remotely. She shares her unique story and some advice on how to succeed working remotely, and I hope you guys can take quite a bit out of this conversation. Thanks again for joining us. I hope you enjoy the episode.
So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Thank you for the awesome introduction. I'm really excited to talk about this just because we are in a really unique position where there is a lot of remote work, and a lot of us had to shift that way in order to accommodate with what we were previously doing. Can't wait to go into it.
Yeah, it's a totally different world. Being at the lab bench is like 90% of our job, and the fact that you've managed to kind of export that and provide a resource from home is really interesting to me. But for the listeners, tell us a little bit about what you do and how you're doing it now and where you're located and a little bit about your story this year, because I feel like you've accomplished so much in the last like 6 or 8 months.
Yeah, definitely. So I am a recent graduate of California State University, Channel Islands. I got my bachelor's in chemistry. And in my last year of my undergrad, I was actually able to do an internship with Parker Hannifin Biofiltration. And as soon as I graduated, I was actually promoted to a lab technician position. So all throughout the summer of me graduating, I had a job immediately, which is so rare for a lot of graduates, especially coming out of undergrad.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
So I was, you know, really grateful. This was also, you know, mid-pandemic. This was actually before I started my my business, but I was doing this and we were actually deemed essential workers because a lot of my coworkers and a lot of the stuff we were testing our filters on were actually going to be filters for the vaccine at the time. So there was a lot of stuff we were doing to help in COVID on our end. So we were working constantly, and it was perfect for me because, you know, I was done with school, so I dedicated my time to work. And I thought this was what I had wanted, but, you know, I know a lot of people lost their jobs during the pandemic, but I was in that other smaller percentage where people lost like housing. And that's kind of where this story kind of came to be. So I was making fantastic money and I had a job, but there was nowhere I could rent solely as like a single like renter. At the time I was like renting with other people and they all moved back home when school went online because they're like, I'm not going to pay for rent if I can live with my parents. So they went back home, which was totally reasonable. And that left me out there trying to find a place. And even though I was making more money with my promotion, it still wasn't enough to get housing. So I was moving from like Airbnbs to like hotels. Like I was literally just trying to make ends meet so I could stay with this job because I thought I wanted it so badly. And even then I found myself doing a lot of lab work, which I loved, but then I was doing a lot of office work and a lot of data entry. And I was like, this is stuff I could totally do from home. And I originally tried to propose doing a remote position and I was denied because I was one of the few people that were in the lab and because I had just promoted to lab technician instead of an intern. So they needed me. But I was able to negotiate a position to where I was working semi-remotely. But even then I was I was driving like 2 hours from like my work to back home. And then I would like lab for like a couple days a week. So it was exhausting. I was totally exhausted. And I had like this quarter life crisis, like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my housing. I might lose my job if I lose my housing. What's going to go on? I can't move back home. And my partner was on his way to go to school in Alaska. And he was like, look, I think you should come with me. And it was totally spur of the moment, but it was also like, you know what? I think this is what I need. I needed a change. So I ended up leaving my job and moving up to Alaska with him. Just totally
what
spur
a leap
of the moment.
Of faith.
Like, yeah. Oh my gosh. I think we only had like 2 or 3 months to prepare for it. I literally, I think I left, my last day at work was in December, and we moved like early January.
And like the middle of the pandemic too.
In the middle of the pandemic too. Wow. So
this is the most unique story I've heard on the podcast.
It was, yeah, really, really scary leap at first. And because of that, and because I knew we were going to be moving somewhere a little more rural, there was not a lot of science jobs. You know, there wasn't a lot of labs out here. And I was like, I'm not going up there without, you know, understanding like the work environment. I'm like, we have to make money, like we've got to pay rent, you know, somehow. So before I even quit my job, I started looking right away. And I was like, you know, what if I considered remote positions, something that I could work from here in California? And by the time I'm living in Alaska, I could still be working that same position and then transition to work whatever I find out there. So I actually started working a non-STEM position because I just wanted to find a way to like make some sort of cash and really get more experience. And
so you were chatting about finding a job outside of STEM when you were in California and kind of prepping for your move to make sure that you did have a job. So you had like now the opposite problem. You have housing, but no solid position to where you're going. So how did you manage that?
So yeah, so this was like, that in between period, I was in the, you know, starting phases of my business. So I was making some income from that, but I wanted something a little more stable just because I just started my business. So it wasn't something that I could completely like rely on at the moment. But using my experience in my undergrad, I was actually in my chemistry club and I was an officer as a social media like coordinator. So I was in charge of running our social media and really promoting all events online. And so I was able to take that experience and I scored a social media and content creation position with a nonprofit. And I started working with the founder, Anina. So the company is called The World Within Us. So they're all about achieving the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and sustainable travel. So it was something that aligned with my personal goals and, a lot with like my morals and wanting to support all of those like goals too. So it was like gender equality, reduced inequalities, clean water, things like that. So I started working with her and, as I got working with her more, she introduced me to one of her friends who ran like another panel. And she was like, hey, like, I would love to have you on my panel. And I was on the same panel as founder Priyanka from Colfi Beauty, which was I love her. She and I like are awesome now. She's the sweetest person, first of all. So I got to meet her in like pre-launch.
This is such a great example of what we've talked about a lot on this podcast. Is you have no idea how the network and how small the community is. And, you know, just getting yourself into those opportunities and finding, you know, friendships within the community is the best way to network, especially as women in this space. You know, we find each other in like the most unlikely places, but it leads to amazing success in your career if you, you know, take the proper channels. So that's really freaking cool. I think that you've like, just that move to Alaska seems like it's already going well for you.
Yeah, that was the craziest part was that was only my second month in Alaska. And even though I was working a non-STEM position, she was like, so supportive of my like science like business and cosmetics, and she was like, you need to meet my friend. And her friend was actually, you know, hosting this beauty panel, and she was like, yeah, so we're gonna have all these like beauty creators. And I was like, I just started this business. I didn't think I was like considered, you know, someone who could run their own business, or like I was standing next to the founder of Colfi Beauty, like, you know, virtually of course. So I was like, oh my god. And then through that we got connected more, and she was like, I love what you do with The World Within Us. Like, can you work with us as well? So I started working with her too. And through that, all the different panels that they've been hosting and I help them promote, I've networked with even more people. So I'm just constantly meeting new people through these positions that I started. So those were the non-STEM ones. Home. Yeah. And I, this which is all great. From like the same space I'm sitting in now. It's just, it's crazy to think.
So do you miss being in the lab now that you're kind of fully remote? And
I definitely miss the lab. I miss research. Not that I don't do it on my end, but you know, doing more advanced research, I would say. So, like, you know, looking at new concepts and trying to really understand them and apply them to do different things.
Being a scientist, you miss being a working scientist. Yeah.
I really thrived in the lab. It was so funny. I would do poorly in lecture just because I couldn't sit still and things like that. I have a hard time like reading material. But when I was in lab, like I could briefly skim the like the prompts that we would have for the lab that day. But then like we would annihilate it and get it done early and get it done correctly. And that was just, I was so efficient in that. And it just made sense just because it was so fun to me. I loved following the process.
Yeah.
So I guess I do miss that. But at the same time, I've kind of established my own lab being up here. So I have my home lab and I have all of my equipment. So I still get to do some experiments, but with my formulations, it's just as fun.
Like what specific industries are you working in now that you can apply to your STEM experience and degree?
Yeah. So a lot of the panels that I do get approached for are a mix between like beauty panels and STEM panels, or sometimes like a blend of both. So I've done some cosmetic chemistry panels, and those ones are like super niche, so that like the conversations with that one are so fun because I can go into detail about both sides, and people are like, yeah, we want to hear more. And then like more beauty spaces, I try to like shine more about why it's like science, but at the same time still go into the makeup stuff. And the STEM ones, I have to go more into depth as to why even be in the beauty industry. I think that was a huge thing. And like our biggest push is, so our tagline is reducing science stigma. That was a huge thing for me because, I understood like in the first month of starting my business, I would run into these people who were very, involved in the clean natural beauty industry, or which, you know, isn't an actual like term in the beauty industry. And it could be changed across any platform. And I've had to have this conversation several times. I've had that conversation several times, but I always try to approach it without being condescending because I genuinely want people to like understand that they can still use those products. Like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with, you know, knowing what's inside your products. Totally fine. I love transparency. But at the same time, just knowing that, you know, just because you couldn't pronounce it doesn't mean that it's not a safe ingredient. Like for all you know, that could be table salt, you know, but it's just, I told people that it's like learning another language. Like you can't be ignorant about Spanish thinking that people are speaking about you in a rude way when in reality, you just don't understand what they're saying. They could be complimenting you.
That's a great analogy.
Like that's how I've always seen it. So like, I always get like really hurt when people are like, oh my God, did you hear about benzenes? And I was like, I love benzene rings. Yeah. Do not drag them into this. Like,
no, I agree.
It's going to continue. It's really trendy at the moment as well. So there was that. So I was getting that kind of backlash on one end because, you know, people were like, oh, I want natural ingredients. I want this. Like they're basically having, and this is where the stigma comes in. There was a lot of negative stigma towards science and chemistry being involved in cosmetics. They were like, we don't need any chemicals. We don't need this, blah, blah, blah. But on the other end, you know, being feminine in the lab is like a huge deal too. So being able to wear beauty products in lab and be feminine.
Love that you addressed that. I love that you addressed that. It changed my world to feel, I'm sorry, explain more, but it's just like, it hits every core. Like it hit every note it needed to hit. Thank you so much for addressing that.
Yeah, that was a huge deal for me too, was, so there was the stigma of science and beauty, but then there's the stigma of beauty and science that, you know, we have to be more masculine in a sense that, you know, clean is more, or cleanliness, you know, and by being clean, you know, having a bare face, but still being presentable because you have to be semi work appropriate when you're working in the lab. So it's like, it's a strange dynamic because I had to completely change the way I dressed, but I never changed how I wore my makeup and hair when I would like work in the lab. And it was never a problem as long as you weren't in the clean room and you're not reapplying makeup. That's what they're usually about, is like just cross-contamination. But I never once had that happen. Never dropped any lashes, never dropped any hair, like never, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was the thing, is like, you know, people, they look at you and you're you got a full set of makeup on and full lashes, and you're doing this lab experiment, and sometimes you're doing it better than the people who are staring at you. And that was mm-hmm. a huge, huge deal for me, because ultimately, that's why I went into more rigorous chemistry right in the beginning. I wanted to go into cosmetic chemistry way early on in my high school. And then mm-hmm. My mother, you know, being, I'm a first generation student. So my mother's from Hong Kong, and she would tell her customers like, oh, she's going to cosmetology school. No, and I was like, no, that's not what it is. So people would give me the eyes like, oh, that kind of makes sense. Cause I would like have my hair and makeup done all the time. And mm-hmm. I hated how I was associated with that. And also like in a way deemed less intelligent because I, you know, dolled myself up. And I was like, oh, hell no. So I went straight into chemistry. I went into like difficult research. I loved organic chemistry, all kinds of stuff, just to almost like trying to avoid it and run away from it because of that stigma.
I totally agree to a T. It's
You caught me on a good Monday where I'm just like talking too much.
Oh no, because like I mean, it hits close to home, and so like you're just like, oh my god, that's like someone's talking about it, and it feels good knowing that you're not alone in these sort of situations, and that there's people fighting for what you want out there too. So it's always good to see this. And I love hearing these interactions, because it's like when you're trying to battle something like this that you think is like sincerely a problem, and then you get the people who are like, yeah, I've never had that happen to me, so like it doesn't concern me, you know. I love hearing that people are just as passionate about these issues that have occurred to me, because it lets me know that it's happening everywhere and everyone wants to see change. And so that's what we try to apply in our brand, is, you know, bringing beauty back into science and bringing science back into beauty and bringing it all together too. It's not to discourage, you know, if you are less feminine and you prefer to be that way, that's totally fine too. But, you know, accepting it as a social norm in the same way with like cosmetics is, you know, accepting that science is essential to make sure a product is functional, safe, mm-hmm. efficient, you know, things like that. And bringing people into the conversation together is like the biggest thing. So we try to educate from every perspective, whether you do have the degree or you don't. That's really what I'm about, especially when I do these different types of talks. And that's why I have been really open to doing more of these panels, is to really get that message out there and speak with the audience on that and kind of like change how they see it. Mm-hmm. And understand that they can learn it too, just as a different perspective. So I wouldn't, you know, it's kind of what you do with research. And that's something that kind of prepared me for my business, was presenting my research posters. You learn to speak to your audience. So if you have like a professor, you speak to them, okay, they're a professor in chemistry, so they know what they're talking about. So you go with like harder terminology, whereas you might get like a high school student who comes by and is like, oh, how does this work? Okay, so similar to the experiment you do. And there's times where I've had like little kids, and you explain, okay, so if I have this egg mm-hmm. and like things like that, you know, you have to change it for your audience. And that's the same thing that I do with our social media when we talk about our products and how they function.
It's so funny that you say that. I actually never realized. I get pointed out for doing exactly that, kind of like tailoring my conversation to the people that I'm around. And I never realized that was a skill I developed being in STEM. And so you just pointed it out. I do get like a lot of friends of mine, they're like, oh my God, you really know how to handle like a lot of situations, and you know how to speak to people and meet them where they are. And I always just thought it was like, okay, cool. I have a good judge of character and I can tell what people need to hear. But it does make a lot of sense that when you're presenting research and you're trying to, you know, get yourself printed in some sort of way, you do have to tailor your conversation to whomever you're presenting to, and meet them where they are, as opposed to like being above them with some crazy terminology. I would always like find a way to make it relatable. And I never considered that it came from like practicing and presenting things and being part of research at all. So thank you for that insight. And also another great application, guys, keep having conversations and networking with folks, and that'll teach you how to host yourself and present yourself when you're out of school.
Definitely. And this statement might come across a little controversial, but I think that's what truly makes a great scientist, is the fact that they can talk to people from different backgrounds about the work that they do, because say when you get approached by someone who only wants to talk about it at the highest level that they know to make them seem more intelligent, I feel like that it's just, it's so terrible. And it's like, no one's learning anything and no one thinks you're that much smarter just because you're using the jargon that you understand. And because you did this niche, you know, research, like that doesn't make you like 100% awesome. I think it's great when you can. And I think that's why I love seeing so many women on social media who are scientists and making these TikToks and making these reels for everyone to understand these scientific experiments, because they can change the conversation and cater it to a wider audience, as opposed to these people who are like, well, I'm just smarter than everybody. Yeah. And I just want to talk to only the smart people about it. And it's like, no, it should be, it should be accessible and understanding from every perspective.
I want to ask you, how did you start your platform, and how, like, I mean, it's obviously grown into something exceptional. You just had your full year, right? Your first year for your brand. But how did you decide to start your platform?
Oh gosh. So my business platform, correct?
Well, I guess either one, because your social media platform, what came first?
So I have to say that my personal account started first. Mm-hmm. So I look back at it and I used to do tons of science stuff. So I was heavily involved in science as far back as like elementary school. I actually got to move on to like the science fair for my like county, because the project that I was working on, my teacher,
I remember you telling this story.
I was like, even though it didn't win any awards, it was like unique because people weren't thinking that way. It wasn't like, okay, what could get me the best grade? It was like genuine, like, I want to know what's going to happen, you know? Mm-hmm. And because of that, it was a lot of just kind of like photo sharing and kind of, you know, bragging like, oh, this is what I'm doing today, you know? And so like my social media didn't always start out with the science stuff. And I look back and I wish I'd taken more science photos and posted more about it, but it's more mainstream now than it was before, which is awesome, you know? But like my last year of undergrad, I had this shift where I was like, I would go to conferences and my friend would get so excited when someone would step on a panel and she'd be like, oh my God, that's him. And I was like, I don't know who that guy is. And she's like, he is like one of the best scientists on Twitter. And he's just awesome. So his like handle is like your favorite scientist from the hood. So his story is fantastic. You have to like look into him. He literally grew up in like the hardest parts of like California kind of area. And, went and pursued and got all these degrees and works in like a rigorous thing, but goes back and helps those same communities that he grew up in, where he was told constantly that he would amount to nothing. So he's so inspirational. And like, I was like, I didn't even think, you know, people could be idolized like that on social media for doing science. And that was a huge turning point for me, where I was like, I want to brag about science. Like, maybe I don't want to just brag about what concert I went to, you know, or today, or like what my outfit is. Like, I think I want to get more into the science space. And so I had this shift where I was, you know, posting more about like my science videos and things like that. And then, you know, as I started my business and we got into the pandemic, I did see how TikToks came into popularity and how people were really sharing stuff that they were doing at home or their professions and monetizing off of it. And I was like, that's kind of cool too. So I would see people my own age, my same field, my same like education levels, being able to get paid to do this kind of stuff and get these cool opportunities and speak on panels and make these collaborations. And I was like, I think that's something for me. And it ties into what you were mentioning before, you know, being a performer. Like, we were really out there and we constantly want to, like, you know, be with people and like really just kind of like not show off essentially, but like work with a crowd. And I think that's how like my reels got tailored to, was like taking that performance perspective and like experience and applying it with my science to have like a completely unique social media platform where I can, you know, be really funny and, you know, make these niche jokes that like only scientists would know, but make it in a fun way. And it was awesome. It was a great way to really like change how my Instagram looks. So this is the same account I've had since I first started it, like maybe in like high school. and like, I started with like, maybe like a couple, like 100 followers, maybe like 600, but it never grew past that. Like I think that was the highest I had ever gotten. And then when I made the shift to go to science, like it grew so fast in less than a year. And I was like, oh my gosh, like there's more people out here who are doing stuff like me and wanting to see more stuff like mine. So that was the biggest change. And when I started my business, so yeah, we just did celebrate our 1 year anniversary. Thank you. So again, like in between that shift of getting ready to move to Alaska and getting promoted as a lab technician, I started my business. So I won't go into the origin story as to like how I started it just because it's a little long, but basically it came with the concept of like, you know what? I'm ready to make my own products. I revisited my love for cosmetic chemistry. I always made my own products and I finally decided that I wanted to do my own and started on social media because I had this huge following and kind of pushed it out and made its own platform and grew from there. And then I was finally able to establish my working like functioning website and like ship like worldwide. So it was just, it was awesome. And all of the products that we make are science inspired just because I base it off of the people that I've met and have been inspired by. So I love seeing the biologists, I love seeing the chemists, I love seeing the physicists, and I try to make products that, you know, showcase them and, you know, reflect them in the beauty space. So it's just been such a journey.
So we're wrapping up now, and I appreciate you for being with us and sharing all of this information. And I just have two more questions for you. Mm-hmm. One of them is, what is the advice that you would give your undergraduate self?
Oh my goodness, that one's a toughie. So I think the biggest one, I think I've actually said this one multiple times, but really understanding the material as opposed to memorizing to get the grade. I think that was the biggest thing for myself was how we were trained. So in the upper division classes I took in high school, it was heavy regurgitation. Like you needed to memorize because it was always question, answer. And if you didn't have everything memorized, you were screwed because like there was never any, it was just a blank box and you just had to like be able to regurgitate as much information as you possibly could. And it really killed my brain because it was almost like a sponge. I would literally soak up absolutely every like last drop as I could and then completely wring myself out for that test. And by the time the semester was over, there was no moisture left in the sponge, like completely. So like I would like leave that class after doing the final and start my next semester and have no memory of some of the applications that we would have in the previous course. So they'd be like, oh, you should have known this stuff. You did PCHEM 1 last semester, so this should be easy. And I'd be like, I essentially had to reteach myself every semester because I wasn't applying the material. I would watch other people do it and I would see it with like how they did their homework. And that's when I really knew, wow, they truly understand this. So they could be getting worse grades than me because, you know, they weren't turning in their assignments all the time or like they would not do well on like discussion things, but when it came to tests, they were excellent because they knew how to apply the material that they learned through the books. And I think that would be my biggest thing for my undergrad self is to really take the time to understand how things work instead of focusing on the grade that I'm going to get.
Wow, I really like that. I wish I had heard that when I was in my undergrad. I think that I was taught the same way in high school, and college was a very rude awakening because in a general chemistry degree, almost everything you learn in the previous semester is an application of what's going to happen next, especially when it comes down to like the elevation in mathematics when you go from Calc 1 to Calc 3. Awesome. So my last question is, what is the best piece of professional advice that you still apply to your day-to-day now?
Oh my gosh, it just came to me. Yes, definitely. if you ever, oh my goodness, this is one of my favorite professors was actually in my community college. He gave the best advice, because I feel like he was more down to earth and real than some university professors, just because, you know, they're like, oh, I work at, you know, as a professor at a higher university, so, you know, that means more something, and people like kind of bash on people who are at community colleges when they have like the same degree. So I just want to put that out there first. It's like, he's just as qualified, if not more, than a lot of these individuals, and his advice was so much more like sticking to my mind than anything else I received from my university professors. But the thing that he told me, because I got to know him a lot closer because I started working with him in and out of the lab, and really focusing on what my career path was going to be. And he would tell me that he avoided chemicals as much as possible. And I was like, Mike, you're a chemist. Like, what is that? Like, what do you even mean by that? And he was like, he's like, as a chemist, you have to understand that your lifespan is being cut every single day with how much you're exposed to. He's like, I already know I'm going to die sooner than I'm supposed to because of the exposure I've had to chemicals. So I try to counter that as much as possible by not getting involved. So like, anytime he has to show people what they do. So for instance, when you're, you know, trying to figure out the scent of what your like product is, and you know, you do the wafting, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. He'll do it, but with like a closed cover. So he won't actually do it and like smell it himself. He'll have the students do it. And of course it's always safe, because like, it's an experiment he does, you know, every single year. So he tries to avoid doing that same wafting, especially if it's something super volatile, and he could be inhaling that literally how many times a week, because how many courses is he teaching, how many times a semester, how many times a year, and it adds up, and it made so much more sense. So anytime he was working with something difficult, he made sure to wear gloves, no matter how safe it was, you know, whether it be like a really, really diluted like alcohol, or if it was like, you know, sodium bicarbonate, he was like, I don't care. He was like way more cautious than others are, because they try to like show off with it. If you are going to work in this space, you know, really pay attention and wear as much PPE as possible, and try not to be as exposed to it, because it essentially, we are shedding years off of our life just being in this field. Yeah, I think something that totally reminded me of that too, outside of that, where I really like, oh my gosh, yeah, I really need to like take what he said like heavily. So I don't know if you've ever seen Radioactive. It's the story of Marie Curie.
Yes, it's so good.
First of all, so good.
Yeah.
But you watch it and you're like, oh my God, like they're literally touching radioactive material. And they're just like, and they put it in toothpaste. They put it in everything. Like the, yeah. It was like the,
and you're wondering why she's hallucinating. And it's like,
yeah. You and know. You're like, how could they not know that? But at the same time, you know, that's going to happen to us essentially. I mean, you know, even look back at like 10 years ago, 10 years ago, we were using something that we would never use to this day, because we were like, oh my gosh, remember we were using so much, like, let's use tanning beds, for example, tanning beds. We were like, yeah, we want to get tan. And we look at it today and we're like, you're insane if you tan today, because like of the damage that it does. And that's going to happen in the near future. 20 years down the road, there's going to be something that we were like, our kids are going to be like, you were an idiot for doing, and you may not know. Like right now we could be like, oh, this is totally safe. And then like 20 years later, we find out that it never was.
Yeah.
Science is constantly changing.
Yeah. That's a dangerous statement to say in 2021, but I completely understand you. So thank you, Professor. What was his name?
Dr. Mayfield.
Dr. Mayfield. Thank you for the good advice and trying to keep us young and alive, because sometimes, especially when you're used to being in the lab, but poor lab practices are the things that are the hardest to undo, because, you know, you start to do it as an everyday, it's part of your job, you go into the monotony of it, and then you forget that, like, no, this isn't a job that I should be taking proper care of myself. So that's worth remembering. Thank you for being part of the podcast. I really enjoy speaking with you, and I definitely want to have you back to talk more about your business. But is there anything you'd like to share? Tell us where to find you, any new things that we should be looking out for?
So you can find me and my business. Our biggest platform is Instagram. That's just where I reside most. But we do have a Facebook, a LinkedIn, just about everything. But if you go to my Instagram, I have like a link in my bio that has access to all of that. We have our online store of all of our products.
So if you're thinking of buying gifts, make sure to check out The Alchemist Asia soon and stock up early. I think that's all for us today, but I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was a fun conversation and I cannot wait for the second segment. I think that's going to be fun, if not more. Like, I'm just really excited for it.
Yeah, I love speaking to, especially like all of us who are part of STEM and started a business. Like, I think it's so important to share the back end, you know, like, yes, we have our understanding of a lab, but starting a business is a whole other story. And I know that you're working on, you know, getting grants right now. I'm also in that process. And I think that both of us sharing our experiences as entrepreneurs would be really helpful for some listeners. So I'm really excited to have you back on, and I'm happy to have you anytime. So if you have any more ideas or any new projects you're working on, you know, the Glam Chemist is happy to have you back on.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Thank you. So thank you guys for listening. This was Asia Fee from Alchemist Asia, and we're going to have her back on soon. So thanks for listening.